Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the artists, producers, and industry leaders keeping theater alive and bringing plays to your screen during the pandemic. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to the Tony-winning actor, writer, and director Ruben Santiago Hudson. Over the course of his career, he's appeared on Broadway in shows including Stickfly and Jelly's Last Jam, and off-Broadway in his own play, Lackawanna Blues, but I'm talking to him now as one of the foremost interpreters of the work of August Wilson. He won a Tony in 1996 for his performance in Seven Guitars, appeared in the Broadway production of Gem of the Ocean, and in New York alone has directed stagings of Seven Guitars, The Piano Lesson, and most recently, the Tony-winning revival of Jitney. He's even played Wilson himself in the writer's memoir monologue, How I Learned What I Learned. Now he's written screenplay for the film adaptation of Wilson's 1982 play, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which recently premiered on Netflix with a cast led by Viola Davis and Chadwick Boseman in one of his final performances. Santiago Hudson is in the virtual studio with me to tell us how he learned what he learned about the work of August Wilson, how he moved Ma Rainey from the stage to the screen, and why Wilson's enduring work still speaks to us today. Hey, Ruben. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I have to tell you, I was astonished by your work on Ma Rainey even before I hit play, because I noticed that the running time was 94 minutes. And I thought, whoa, that's not long enough for most first acts of August Wilson plays. Like, I just, and it made me think, not that you'd like cut it to shreds, but that you and your collaborators must have thought really hard about rethinking the way the story is told and sort of reshaping it for the screen as opposed to the stage. Tell me a little bit about sort of what your goals were as you thought about not just the trimming, but the kind of refocusing and reimagining that you guys did.
Well, first of all, my number one goal was to try to write the finest movie I could write. That was number one, obviously. But second, I wanted to make sure that I honored August Wilson and the muscularity and the beauty of his writing, the way he captured authentic, culturally specific style and rhythms and language of Black people that had come up from the South to the North and stayed colored and stayed Black. And, you know, so I wanted to keep that language, but I also didn't want to hurt what August had captured in themes and in drama and in comedy. So it's like, that's all the things I wanted to do. And then I had, I shouldn't say insurmountable because we mounted it, but the very difficult task of pleasing some very powerful entities: Denzel Washington, George C. Wolfe, Netflix, August Wilson, and then Ruben had to somehow find some satisfaction other than just a check. Or I probably should have just go drive a truck somewhere and make a check. I can get a check somewhere else, but I wanted the satisfaction of serving, I guess, all those purposes and all those missions and all those people. And still, because one thing we had in common was we wanted to make a great film. So no matter what any debates came about anything, we kept saying, is this the best thing for the event? And sometimes we would disagree, sometimes we would agree, but it turned out to be for the best.
And what can you, how do you describe what you ended up learning about the ways that August Wilson's work can live on screen in terms of how you shifted sort of the dynamics of a scene or the movement of the piece or in any ways that you might be able to describe?
Well, you know, I had to embrace the fact that as incredible as August Wilson's work was, that everything isn't a gem and everything isn't to be, can be kept. Everything is not precious. So I had to figure out, well, the things that were very important to me, because I knew his work intimately. I know his work intimately. I mean,
have you either been in or directed a production of Ma Rainey?
Yes.
Yeah.
I directed it. I produced one. I recorded, which will be released in December, all 10 plays. And I directed the Ma Rainey in that, among other plays. But to get back to it is I had to find out, okay, if I'm going to remove something that made August incredible, his language, what do I replace it with? I replace it with pictures. Let's replace it with Romare Bearden collages. Let's replace it with William H. Johnson's images in my mind. So though I'm not directing it, I'm hoping and praying, and because of my relationship with George Wolf, we could talk about these things. Yeah. Okay, we're going to take this beauty out of it, this muscularity, this mellifluous storytelling. What do we replace it with? Mellifluous storytelling visually. Right. So that's what I replaced words with. So that's how Hour ended up missing. But I just couldn't let it be gone and you miss it. Whatever I removed from the play, I didn't want you to be able to find it.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And it must have helped all your experience, not only with August Wilson, but specifically with Ma Rainey, to have that kind of not deep knowledge of a play even before you went into it, and deep knowledge of that body of work, right?
Yeah, it helped tremendously, but also it hurt because it made me say, man, I can't lose this. Yeah. I got to lose it. So yeah. I would try it without losing it. Uh-huh. And then I would try it with losing it and see if I could still pick up the rhythms and still pick up the tempo and still pick up the style. So sometime I would have to move something closer to pick up the rhythm of that, of the melody of that, the way that phrasing went.
Right.
It's hard to explain it, but because I know the phrasing so well, it's very similar to me. It's the same phrasing that I speak with. In August, you know, he also wrote that down on a pad and showed me one day when he first heard me audition, the same music I have, same song.
Wow.
That's what he said about my interpretation of his work.
Yeah.
And so it's easy for me to do August Wilson's work because it's the sound of the people that taught me all the lessons that I learned other than in school. It's the lessons I learned at home, that melody, the way mama talked coming from Farmville, Virginia, you know, the way my godmother talked coming from, you know, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. So it's like those rhythms, those are the people in Pittsburgh, those are the people in Detroit, those are the people in Cleveland and Buffalo, people from Mississippi, people from Jacksonville, Florida, and people from Alabama and Virginia.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's so striking about the film is that the monologues are still there. There are probably not all of them. I imagine there are some, you don't think of monologues as being things that show up on screen nearly as often as they show up on stage. And yet it was clear that you worked very hard to sort of give everyone their moment of, you know, their big speech,
aria.
Right?
So that was hard because some of my favorite speeches didn't make it.
Uh-huh.
And I had to wonder, what do I need to keep to tell the story that that we're trying to tell? You know, because as a playwright, we can write to our heart's content. We're the editor. No one can tell you that can't be there. That's too much. No one, when I'm writing a play, that's why I spend the majority of my life in theater.
Right.
Because I'm the editor. You know, I don't have six voices. So, but that's part of the deal that when you sign your contract, it's part of the deal. Right. And those six voices are all very intelligent people, very passionate people. You know, some people's intentions are different. But long as your intention is to make the biggest intention is to make a great movie, you know, but so though these are monologues I've done and said and plays, you know, do we need it? Is it too much? It's too much fat. Let's get to the lean meat.
Right.
But sometimes the fat is what makes it taste good. You know, a little bit of the fat, you know.
Do you have can you think of a moment in particular that you were really sad to lose, or an element that you were really sad to lose?
Many.
Yeah.
One line goes, I'm sad. Because I literally, my actors always tell me when I'm directing his plays, they say, Ruben knows every line. And I really don't. I scare them. I make them think I know every line. But I know a lot of them, a great deal of them.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot. I would say I know when I'm directing an August Wilson play, I know 80% of the lines, at least.
Right. Yeah. And so You brought up the sort of editing process and the sort of post-production process. How much of what the film became was then shaped? One of my questions was how much of the shape of the film was determined by the screenplay versus the work that you all did sort of post-production? It sounds like you had sort of structured the screenplay. The structure of the screenplay that you wrote ended up being pretty much what we saw. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. I mean, of course, you know, George's vision plays a very strong part of what you see on film because he's the director, no matter what I write in the script, you know. And but as I'm a director, too.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't write any character that I'm not playing myself. Woman, man, child. Mm-hmm. And I don't write any scene that I'm not directing myself. You know, because it's got to work for me before I can give it to somebody else to try to convince them to make it work for them. So, you know, the same way I wrote Lackawanna Blues or Vegas 55 or Loving the Driest Season, any of the other films I've written, you know, I'm always everything in it. And then I have to be selfless enough to hand it to someone else and get out of the way.
Yeah.
And the one thing you cannot capture that Ruben does, and Ruben knows about August's work, is the rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exclusive to me, the rhythms. A lot of people are, you know, from those Southern roots. What we find out in colleges, though, and in conservatories, is what they want to teach out of you is all the habits that in language and style that they think doesn't work. They want you to fit into white theater, white films, white ideas, white vision, you know, European vision. So your Southernness, your countryness, your blackness got to go. August says, come blackness, come Southerness, come country, come in. And a lot of these actors, by the time they get to this place, they've removed all that. And so they got to relearn it. Rube, you're talking to right now with the PhD and with the master's degree and with the bachelor's and everything else and 100 plays and 40 some movies is the same country boy from Lackawanna.
Right.
But I'm still a doctor. And the difference, and I think the contradiction, I think that people feel sometimes with me, particularly if I'm doing Shakespeare, I do a lot of Shakespeare, you know, I've been... Yeah. At, you know, Shakespeare in the Park many times, and because I speak this way, and then I'm on, and there may be in the cup of spider steeped, and one may drink, depart, and yet partake no venom, for his knowledge is not infected. But if one present the abhorred ingredient to his eye, make known how he hath drunk. Then I do that. Then I say, yo, hold on, whoa. What if I slide in over here, and then when I holler at him this way, maybe in the kids from Juilliard, and he'll be like, did he just say he was going to slide over and holler at him this way? And then I'll just go right back into the language, too hot, you know. And they would say, how do you do that? Because I have learned to make myself accessible to all kinds of forms of language in existence so I can get ahead, so I can make you comfortable in the room. Mm. But when you get me like this, you get just me. You get the boy from the rooming house in Lackawanna. I did not remove that from my persona. I did not remove that from who I am. I added on to it. And everything I've learned in my life has its place. And the place that I'm from, that rooming house, has its place. And that's the biggest part of me.
Yeah. Yeah. Not only do you know August Wilson's work, but you've even, you know, played him to, in a sense, and you've done How I Learned What I Learned. And how did his your sort of knowledge of not just his work, but also August Wilson, the person, kind of filter into the work you did on the screenplay?
Because in my hundreds and hundreds of hours of conversation with August over the two decades that we were friends and and he was a mentor of mine and a combatant at times and a supporter. Out of all that experience, I got to know the man and what the things that were important to him, why he wrote his work, what he wanted it to, how he wanted it to affect the world, where I fit into it, where, you know. And so I would instill some of that when I'd be fighting to keep certain lines or keep certain scenes. He, you know, I knew August was about empowering his community. I knew August was, you know, adamant about the celebration of being black. There is a celebration. It's just not woe, and it's just not pain. There is a joy, a secret cup of gladness, Ozzie Davis would call being black. And so I knew that August celebrated that. I knew he was well aware of Ozzy and Ruby and their fight and Harry Belafonte and, you know, Miri Baraka and many of the revolutionary artists who in their own way paved the way for August.
I'll have more with Ruben right after the break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
And now here's more with Ruben Santiago Hudson.
Of course, we can't talk about the movie without talking about the cast who was involved. At what point did you know, that you were writing for Viola Davis at any point as you were working on the script? And did that away? How did that influence the way you approached the screenplay? Did it at all?
I would be lying if I didn't say it didn't affect it a little bit, but whoever was going to play Ma, I knew that I had to create an aura that was not in the play yet. Ma Rainey comes in on page 48 of a 102-page play. Ma Rainey and my movie came in, and our movie came in page one. The first thing you hear is the thing that was her God's gift, was her most powerful aspect, her voice. The first thing you hear is her moaning in the black, and it comes into light.
Yeah.
And I wanted to put you in her temple, which was the show tent. I wanted to make sure it was power, show her power. And then I didn't leave her. I came back to her in the hotel, walking through the lobby like the queen. Her telling, and in the script, when you get a copy of the script, you'll see, unless they did something, I don't know they did to it, that people part like the Red Sea as she crosses through the lobby, you know, eyeing her, the highbrows looking at her, and she highbrowing them right back. Mm-hmm. Power, power, power. So when people are talking about when is she coming, when is she coming, when is she coming, her whole day is coming, she's coming. Her whole day is prepared for her, when her dress, her hat, everything. I'm going there. I'm going, and I'm going to put on the show.
Yeah. And what about Chadwick Boseman's involvement? He's spectacular in the film, along with, as is Viola Davis, of course. When did you know he was involved?
Well, I learned, you know, because they have to make deals and work out schedules. I knew that's who they wanted. And they were going to try to make it work. So, I was going to write the film I was going to write. And whether Viola played it or Susie Q played it, I was going to write a film to impact and empower Ma Rainey so her effect, her Bunyan-esque aura would reign throughout the movie. So it just helps tremendously when you have somebody as powerful and as wonderfully talented as Viola Davis, when you have somebody as extraordinary as who brings such an incredible feel and level of integrity as Chadwick Boseman, who walks into a room and commands the space that he's in and empowers that space with dignity, with integrity, with purpose.
Right, yeah. And of course, we should say that there are a handful of theater actors who a lot of theater fans will all recognize. Coleman Domingo's in it, and Michael Potts, and Jeremy Sheamus. There's sort of a great team of like theater folks who have a lot of stage experience, and many of them have August Wilson experience too.
That's another reason you want George. That's another reason I'm fighting for George to direct it.
Yeah.
I threw George's name in whatever, no matter what you read or what you see. I said to Denzel, I need George. Because I knew then we would get people who knew and appreciated August's work, theater actors. It'll be a different process. I know how George works. He did my film Lackawanna Blues.
Yeah, right.
I did Henrietta Lacks for George. I know what he does. He wants to have rehearsal. He wants to discuss purpose, arc, dialogue, intention. You know, they don't do that now. You know, I've done a lot of films.
Yeah.
More than three dozen. And that ain't a whole lot in the big Hollywood scheme of things, but for a regular old, you know, yeoman actor, it's decent. And directors don't do that. They don't want to have rehearsal. They want to be like, show me what you're going to do and let's film it, let's light it, let's shoot it. You know, George actually wants a process, a theater process. a real process. And so I don't know what they, you know, the names that I hear about who's directing other plays. I don't know what their process is. I mean, movies. Mm-hmm. I don't know them. And probably I won't get a shot at any of them because they probably don't know me. They don't go, who goes to the theater to see mm-hmm. who's Santiago Hudson in the 100 plays that he's done. So as much as I love August's work and as much as I feel at a very extraordinarily high level of intimacy of his work, who's going to get Ruben a shot? Is Barry Jenkins or whoever? Do they know me? So I worry a little bit that some of the actors who have dedicated their lives to August's work won't get a shot.
Right.
Won't get an opportunity because they understand and know that language. You don't have to teach them how to do it. And then these directors that don't know the language, don't know the style, don't know August's history or work, how do they help give that to some of the actors that have never done the plays, that have never read the plays? They read this film script, whoever writes this film scripts. You know, so that used to worry me, and I just had to say, Rube, let it go. You know, you did your job.
Right.
You know, so anyway, we weren't talking about, what keeps me up at night.
Yeah. When did you start work on this project? What was the timeline of?
Started out at HBO a couple years ago.
Yeah, a couple years ago. Okay. Yeah.
And then, then we hung there for about a year.
Right.
And then I probably did 8 months with new regime, with new intention. Right. Well, not new intention, but new people know me a little bit, budgets changing, budgets up, budgets down, budget back up, cut.
And then, how do you think about the way, how does Ma Rainey, the play, resonate now in 2020 differently than it maybe did, even 2 years ago when you first started working on the piece?
Not much difference. I mean, the situation that Black America finds itself in is similar to the same situation Ma was in 1927, the same situation Loomis was in damn near in 1911, and Joe Turner's Come and Gone. The same situation, that Sally Two Kings trying to free his people and trying to fight for dignity, integrity, and freedom in 1906 in Gem of the Ocean. So our problems remain visceral and the same in a lot of ways. It's just done differently. You know, there's still a prison system. There's still a parchment farm in Mississippi. You know, there's still ways to lock Black folks up and get them to do your work for free. So it's we got to do it a different way, but we're going to do it. Because it's money, it's marketable. So Ma Rainey's, if she was today, if she was an R&B hip hop singer today, she'd be fighting the same thing. Right. White people taking her power, putting it in a box, selling it and getting the most of the money and giving her a percentage. usurping it, as they would say in Shakespeare's play, the usurper.
Right.
You know, has that changed? Whether it's boxing, art, or music,
And we've talked some about your long relationship with August Wilson, your long and very deep relationship with August Wilson. How do you think of the way he influenced you as an artist? How has him and his work sort of really influenced the kind of artist that you became and the kind of work that you have gone on to do?
First of all, it gave me a platform and an opportunity to have a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I look back on the past 2.5 decades, almost 3 decades of my career, it's been about August Wilson's work more than anything. I mean, and I've been in some prestigious companies. I came to New York in the Negro Ensemble Company in Soldiers Play, Pulitzer Prize, 1982. I came in 83 and picked up the national tour. And that's my first. And then that brought me into New York to Off-Broadway to Ceremonies of Dark Old Men. So I've had some great opportunities, the New Federal Theater, Shakespeare in the Park. But the majority of people recognize me most from August's work because those two Tony Awards, the one for actor and revival of a play. Right. So, and not to mention recording all 10, well, to mention recording all 10 of those and getting ready to release those in educational and research places and places just for entertainment values. So he influenced me there. He influenced me as a writer. His conversations telling me, the things I write, don't be afraid to let my people talk. America, the world doesn't want Black folks talking. You got to give them a voice. Let them talk. Don't be afraid. Don't let people tell you what to say. You know, those kind of things. And then telling me straight up, you need to direct my plays. And give me an opportunity to direct Gem of the Ocean at the McCarter Theater, 1997, I think it was. I had retired from directing for 22 years, and I came back with that. So, and haven't stopped since then. I mean, they got me on the brakes now. You know? Yeah. Hold up, Rube. We let us in. You know, so I'm paying a lot more attention to a lot of other writers around me that need me as well. Yeah.
And this, the play, came out, we're recording this just before the film comes out on Netflix on the 18th. What's next for you after that?
I'm very excited about Lackawanna Blues coming to Broadway in the fall.
Wow. Yeah. I'm
very excited. I was yesterday at the theater, almost broke out in tears cause I haven't been in theater in 10 months. And in the past 50 years of my life, every year of those 50, I have been in a theater, whether seeing a play, rehearsing a play. I hadn't been in a theater in 10 months, man. And so I needed to walk the stage. I walked an empty stage in an empty theater, and my heart was still full because I knew this is where I'm most comfortable. Yeah. So come September, all things work out the way they're supposed to. And I think now with this new administration, finally getting some useful information and some information that looks as though it's here to help us, not to hurt us, I think we will be ready to come back into the theater open arms in the fall. And one of the first plays out is Lackawanna Blues, making its Broadway debut.
And will you be in it again?
I don't let anybody do that. That's my mother. Okay, I'm not putting my mother in anyone else's hands. It's me and an incredible guitar player who's replacing my guy and my road dog, my partner in crime for the past 20 years, Bill Sims Jr., who passed away and almost left me in the lurch. I didn't want to do it again. And on his deathbed, he said to me, "You have to do it." And I said, "Why, Bill? I don't have you." He said, "Because they need it." You have to remember, Gordon, you know, when Lackawanna Blues became a hit, it was right after 9/11.
Right.
It was a hit before that. We put it to bed. 9/11 hit, and everybody wanted to hear my mother, Nanny, the mother of the community, say it's going to be all right. And so we came back out in 2002, and we toured it. And then I put it to bed again until last year. And now Broadway's beckoning because you know why? They need it. They need Nanny to say it's going to be okay because we're coming through it, you know. And we're going to come through this. And Nanny, and hopefully Nanny's blessing will help with Lackawanna Blues.
Yeah. Oh, great. And do you have, you mentioned you've done a lot of work on film over the course of your career, including Ma Rainey. What, do you have anything coming up in the film realm or go ahead.
I'm presently writing a film right now, which I'm slated to direct and which I cannot disclose because the three companies that put all the money together, let us control the narrative. So I will let them control the narrative, but I'm writing it. That's my job right now. And I'm overwhelmed with all these wonderful, wonderful, accolades that Ma Rainey is getting. So I'm getting to talk to people like you, wonderful people like you, and one after the other. And it's just like, wow, you didn't forget the writer, because they forget the writer a lot.
They often do. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so I'm, you know, my publicist has been working diligently to make sure that they don't forget me on this one. And it means the world to me that people like you would give me the time to at least have a voice.
Well, I think it's particularly listeners for this podcast who are theater people and will have seen Ma Rainey, because everyone has seen Ma Rainey, I feel like, will understand the work that you did, because it can be sort of invisible in terms of the shaping that you did in terms of taking a play and making it making it live on screen.
Gordon, then you've done your job.
Yeah, well, that's right, right?
I don't want to be visible. I want to be remove myself. I don't want you to discover me in the process. But after it's done and everybody else get the champagne, give me a glass.
Yeah. If you were going to work on a film adaptation of another August Wilson play, what would you want to do next, to either write or direct or both?
You my man. You my man. You're going to give me a lot of trouble. Listen, I will, to be quite honest with you, I will write any one that they ask me to write, but I got to get one to direct.
Yeah.
If they don't see me as a director, it's going to be hard for me to, you know, I mean, and I would think the public and the theater goers would beckon them to let me at least act in one of them. You got 8 more to do.
Yeah.
Is which it one role for Mr. Rubin in this?
I mean, at least. I hope one in each.
I hope my film just take, would y'all let Mr. Rubin in, please?
Which one would you direct? Do you know?
I swear, I it'd be like, throw it up in the air and let me grab one. I would have said Jitney because of what I've been with it so long, but I just lost Anthony Chisholm, and I almost can't fathom being in Jitney without Chisholm. So, but if that would be the one, then I'd do it. But I'd love to direct any of them or write any of them that I'm invited to. That group and that mission that Denzel was on is extraordinary, and it would mean the world to me to continue to be a part of it. You know, and I'm not making demands by saying, you know, I have to direct one, but I'm just saying what I think is very, very important, and that I can add more to this than just Ma Rainey. And I hope now that the world is embracing Ma Rainey, that it shows the powers that be as well that we need to continue having Rubin here and there. I spoke to a writer yesterday who does not even like August. He said to me straight up, I don't like August's work, but I want to write one. And I said, well, I love his work, and I probably won't get to write another one. You know, so I said, but, and I've heard directors say the same thing. I don't even like August's work, but I got to be a part of this. And to me, that it's almost a travesty to say that and to still get chosen to do this work because your name is a Hollywood name, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So that's a personal thing, and I know that's going to get me in trouble, but I said it, you know?
Yeah. Well. I have faith that you will be involved in the coming films that August Wilson's work becomes, and congratulations again on Ma Rainey. It's great. It's so good, and it was really a pleasure to watch. So, thank you for joining me. Thanks for taking the time to chat. I appreciate it.
I so appreciate the work you're doing and an opportunity to have a chance to chat with you.
That was Ruben Santiago Hudson, who wrote the screenplay for Netflix's new film adaptation of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend. You can find past episodes of Stagecraft or subscribe on Apple Podcasts and on all the other pod places, including Spotify, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is another great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. Until then, find me on Twitter at @GCoxVariety. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.